Make your weekend better at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Fresh craft beer, great vibes, and a tap room perfect for kicking back. Grab a pint, bring friends, and enjoy the weekend at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Go to BuenaConnectionBrewing.com. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Beverage Chronicles, the show where every pour tells a story. I'm Gary Monteroso, inviting you to explore the world of craft beer, wine, spirits, coffee, and beyond. We regularly sit down with the brewers, distillers, and the beverage innovators who are shaping the way we enjoy what's in our glass. So, why don't you settle in? The conversations are fresh, the stories are bold, and the next round of Beverage Chronicles starts right now. I want to tell you today about something called gluten-free beer, because this has gone from a niche curiosity to a regular sight in coolers and tap lists. And it gives people who avoid gluten a way to join the party without paying for it later. At its heart, it's still beer, grain, water, hops, and yeast, but the grain bill and a few brewing tricks can make all the difference. So let's start by talking about what exactly it is that makes a beer gluten-free. Well, you see, traditional beer is built on barley and often wheat. Both are naturally rich in gluten proteins, which can be a problem for people with celiac disease or gluten sensitivity. A truly gluten-free beer simply skips those grains entirely. Instead, brewers reach for gluten-free options, such as millet, rice, corn, buckwheat, and sometimes sorghum or oats, that are certified gluten-free. As long as the recipe avoids barley, wheat, rye, and any contaminated adjuncts from the mash tun to packaging, you are in naturally gluten-free territory. There's also a related category, gluten-reduced beer. In this case, the brewer still uses barley and possibly wheat, but adds special enzymes during fermentation to break down gluten into smaller fragments that test below certain thresholds. These beers can be easier on some sensitive drinkers and taste very close to normal beer, but they're not considered safe enough for everyone with celiac disease. Now, in terms of how gluten-free beer is brewed, on any brew day, gluten-free beer looks familiar but behaves like a slightly fussy cousin. The basic steps, the mash, the lauter, the boil, the ferment, they're all the same, but the details shift to suit the alternative grains. Instead of a mash full of barley malt, the brewer mills millet, rice, buckwheat, or other gluten-free grains and mixes them with hot water to convert starches into fermentable sugars. Because these grains don't have the same enzyme power as barley, brewers often rely on added enzymes and more complex mash schedules, with extra rests and steep changes in temperature to coax out fermentable wort. Mash times can be longer, and temperatures can be adjusted more to deal with thicker, gummier grain beds. Now, once the sugars are in solution, the rest is pleasantly routine. The wort, now that's the raw beer, is boiled with hops for bitterness, flavor, and aroma, just like any other beer. And after cooling, the brewer pitches yeast, often dry yeast that's been propagated on gluten-free media, and lets fermentation do its magic. If the goal is gluten-reduced beer rather than fully gluten-free, this is where the enzyme dose gets added alongside the yeast, so it can quietly munch away on gluten in the background. From there, it's the usual dance: ferment, condition, package, and carbonate. The main extra chore for the brewer is obsessively preventing cross-contact, making sure hoses, tanks, and packaging lines aren't carrying over gluten from another product, especially if they also brew traditional beers. Now, the big question, of course, is does it taste like real beer? The short answer these days is often yes, and sometimes surprisingly so. Beer is brewed entirely with gluten-free grains, used to have a reputation for being thin, cidery, or oddly sweet, especially early sorghum-based attempts. Well, today's recipes are much more dialed in. Millet and buckwheat bring a bready, toasty character. Rice and corn contribute lightness and crispness, and careful use of hops can deliver familiar pale ale, IPA, or lager profiles. Many gluten-free pale ales and IPAs are bright, citrusy, and nicely bitter, while gluten-free lagers can be clean and refreshing, with a slightly different grain note if you're paying attention. Gluten-reduced beers, because they will start with barley, tend to be almost indistinguishable from their fully glutinous counterparts in both flavor and body. The enzyme work happens behind the scenes, so the beer still tastes like the style on the label, whether that's a malty amber, a roasty stout, or a hop-forward IPA. For a casual drinker, it's often impossible to tell by taste alone that anything special was done. In terms of the audience for these beers, well, the most obvious audience is people with celiac disease. And that is an autoimmune condition where even tiny amounts of gluten can cause serious health issues. For them, naturally gluten-free beer, and that means no barley, wheat, or rye at all, is the safest route. And having more options means they can finally grab a pint with friends instead of nursing a seltzer all night. Right behind them are people with non-celiac gluten sensitivity or wheat intolerance. They might not have the same medical restrictions, but they feel better when they cut back on gluten. And gluten-free or gluten-reduced beers give them a way to enjoy beer without the same discomfort. Some people in this group are comfortable with gluten-reduced options. Others prefer to stick to fully gluten-free beers. There's also a growing group of drinkers who are simply experimenting with different, better-for-me choices. These are the people who might not need gluten-free beer medically, but are curious, have gluten-free partners or friends, or like supporting breweries that pay attention to inclusive options. For them, gluten-free beer is part of a bigger landscape that includes non-alcohol beer, low-carb options, and other lifestyle drinks. In the end, gluten-free beer is about opening the door a little wider. The brewing process may involve different grains and extra steps, but the goal is familiar: a flavorful, refreshing drink that brings people together. Whether it's a carefully crafted millet IPA or a gluten-reduced stout brewed with an enzyme assist, the message is the same. You don't have to give up beer just because you're giving up gluten. So, if you're gluten-free or you love someone who is, there's never been a better time to explore what's out there. Start with styles you already enjoy, be open to a slightly different grain character, and treat it like any beer adventure, one sip at a time, preferably in good company.
I'm Dan Sinclair for Beverage Chronicles. The 1920s introduced one of the most peculiar lawmaking experiments in America when the government opted to completely prohibit alcohol. Rather than curbing drinking habits, prohibition gave rise to an entire underground scene filled with speakeasies, bootleggers, and some incredibly inventive bartenders. These mixologists had to make do with whatever liquor they could acquire, which often turned out to be quite rough and in need of significant flavor enhancement. This led to a remarkable era of cocktail creativity that produced drinks still cherished today. So, let's toast to the daring individuals who mixed, shook, and stirred their way through America's dry years. Here are the classic cocktails that emerged from that adventurous period. The Bee's Knees. This gin-based concoction became a favorite in speakeasies because honey effectively masked the harsh flavor of bathtub gin. The term itself originated from the slang of the time, where anything outstanding was referred to as the bee's knees or the cat's pajamas. Bartenders combined gin with fresh lemon juice and honey syrup to craft something that was genuinely enjoyable. Recently, this drink has seen a significant revival, with cocktail bars offering it as a nod to the clever innovations of Prohibition. The South Side. Chicago's South Side lent its name to this cocktail, although some tales suggest it originated from the South Side Sportsman's Club on Long Island. Regardless, the drink blends gin with lime juice, sugar, and fresh mint to create a refreshing and enjoyable beverage. Gangster Al Capone was said to be a fan of this cocktail, which makes sense since mint was excellent at concealing the scent of illegal alcohol on someone's breath. Think of it as a mojito's wise older cousin who knows how to keep a secret. The last word. Detroit's Athletic Club is credited with this equal parts cocktail that combines gin, green chartreuse, maraschino liqueur, and lime juice. The drink vanished for many years after Prohibition ended, only to be rediscovered in the early 2000s by a bartender in Seattle flipping through old recipes. Each ingredient pulls its weight, creating something balanced yet complex. The name supposedly came from vaudeville acts, where performers always wanted to get the last word in their routines. French 75. This robust cocktail blends gin, lemon juice, sugar, and champagne to deliver a serious kick. Its name is derived from a French artillery piece used during World War I, which perfectly illustrates its potency. Bartenders in Paris served this drink to American expatriates escaping Prohibition, although some variations substitute cognac for gin. It became a representation of elegance and defiance simultaneously. Scofflaw. A contest was actually held to coin a term for those who flouted prohibition laws, and scofflaw emerged as the winner. A bartender at Harry's New York Bar in Paris quickly crafted a cocktail bearing the same name. This drink combines rye whiskey, dry vermouth, lemon juice, grenadine, and orange bitters into a surprisingly smooth concoction. It was essentially a rebellious gesture against the Prohibition movement, served in a chilled glass with a grin. Between the Sheets. This cocktail has a suggestive name, likely by design, as Prohibition unleashed everyone's adventurous spirit. It consists of equal parts cognac, rum, and triple sec with a hint of lemon juice. Harry's New York Bar in Paris also takes credit for this creation, as it was a hub for American cocktail enthusiasts abroad. The outcome is smooth and deceptively potent, much like the era that birthed it. When Prohibition ended in 1933, one thing remained: the cocktails that emerged from defiance. Tough times didn't deter inventive spirits. Instead, they channeled their energy into crafting bold new beverages. Behind every clandestine bar counter, creative hands developed recipes that are now staples in modern lounges around the globe. Fast forward decades later, and drinks like Bee's Knees echo through menus, not just for their taste, but for the rebellion they embody in a glass. Though history has progressed, these drinks continue to keep a resilient past alive. For Beverage Chronicles, I'm Dan Sinclair.
That was Dan Sinclair. Thanks, Dan, for that report on Prohibition cocktails. And we want to thank you, as always, for joining us here on Beverage Chronicles. I'm Gary Monteroso, and on behalf of all of our regulars and contributors on the show, we thank you for joining us. And if you'd like to drop us a line, we would certainly love to hear from you. You can just contact us by going to our website at beveragechronicles.com and sending us a message. See you next week, everyone.